Coming up on Fronteras, a San Diego study shows two-thirds of East African refugees there don't get adequate interpretation services during doctor's visits.
You worry, are it's going to be help me or are it's going to be damage me, you know, because you're not really comfortable with what he says, what he's going to do.
We take a look at what refugees in that community are doing to get more culturally competent care. And unauthorized immigrants who use social security numbers that don't belong to them to get a job are routinely charged with forgery and identity theft felonies in Arizona's Maricopa County. But now some attorneys are questioning the practice.
Nowhere in the country is unlawful employment being penalized as it is in Maricopa County.
Coming up, the legal fight over prosecuting undocumented workers. But first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations and funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as part of its Local Journalism Center initiative. I'm Crystal Chavez. A guided missile frigate left San Diego Tuesday morning on a six-month deployment to Central American waters. Its mission is one well known to law enforcement along the U.S.-Mexico border. Joe Replegal from our Fronteras desk was at the send-off.
The USS Thatch left San Diego Bay with a crew of 220 sailors and Coast Guard members. Their main mission is to disrupt illegal drug trafficking in the Eastern Pacific and Caribbean waters off Central America. The U.S. military has long conducted anti-drug trafficking operations in that region, but its role has become increasingly important, providing training and equipment for Central American governments who are fighting what's become a very violent drug war. That's according to Stephen Dudley, co-director of Insight Crime, a research group that specializes in organized crime in Latin America.
SOUTHCOM, the United States Southern Command, has stated that they would like to play a larger role in combating criminal organizations in the region. So it's an impetus from the United States side, but it's also coming from these local governments.
Still, some, including U.S. Congress members, have raised concerns about U.S. involvement in anti-drug trafficking activities in Central America. The U.S. cut some intelligence support for Honduran law enforcement last year after that country's Air Force shot down two civilian planes. In the ongoing war on drugs, the Obama administration has said it wants to focus more on prevention and treatment of drug users. But most of the federal budget to combat illegal drugs still goes towards law enforcement interdiction and international anti-drug trafficking efforts. In San Diego, I'm Jill Replogle.
The Texas legislature convened in Austin this week. Texas lawmakers gather once every 2 years. And in regards to cracking down on illegal immigration, the political pendulum swing is certainly evident this time around. Fronteras reporter David Martin Davies has more.
In January 2011, Governor Rick Perry gave the traditional opening remarks to the 82nd Texas legislature, and he made it clear he wanted a crackdown on illegal immigration.
We must abolish sanctuary cities in Texas.
Perry told the lawmakers he was making an anti-sanctuary cities law an emergency item. He wanted a Texas version of Arizona's SB 1070. Perry wanted police officers checking the immigration status of anyone they suspected wasn't properly authorized to be in the country.
We need to free up our peace officers for them to do their job, keeping our families and our neighborhoods safe. Immigration laws and their enforcement are the responsibility of the federal government, but we cannot compound their failure by preventing Texas peace officers from doing their jobs.
Despite Perry's push and the Republican majorities in both Texas houses, the bill didn't pass. So now, fast forward 2 years later, there's the 83rd Texas legislature, and Perry has another crack at passing a Texas SB 1070 type bill, and nada. What was an emergency 2 years ago is off the radar today. It didn't get a mention in the governor's opening remarks.
It turned out that there was very little enthusiasm for that legislation. I think there was over 100 so-called anti-immigrant anti-sanctuary city bills that were introduced. Not a single one of those passed last time.
Charles Foster is a Houston immigration attorney and served as a consultant to both the Barack Obama and George W. Bush presidential campaigns. Foster said this time the Republican lawmakers have learned their lesson.
Most of it was a complete waste of time to begin with because it was going to be found to be preempted by federal law. As it turned out, that was the case in U.S. versus Arizona, the Supreme Court ruled.
And then there was that national election in November that sent shockwaves through the Republican Party.
Bush got 43% of the Hispanic vote, a much larger Hispanic vote today that was down to 27% for Governor Romney. But in the key toss-up states like Colorado, he was only getting 10%. So the handwriting's on the wall. Unless the Republican Party can address these issues responsibly, they're going to become a minority party in the state of Texas.
So essentially, a figurative memo went out to the Texas Republican lawmakers. Introduce no bills that will embarrass the party with Latino voters. But it's going to take more than that to repair the damage done to the GOP brand in Texas, according to Representative Trey Martinez Fisher. He's the chair of the Mexican-American Legislative Caucus.
You know, they believe in English only. They think that Texas should not have pre-K education for its children. 65% of pre-K children are Hispanic. They want to make it a crime to be in this country illegally, and they want to repeal the DREAM Act. I don't think you can reach out to Hispanics if those are your values.
Martinez said the Texas Republicans are learning how to talk the talk, but they aren't willing to walk the walk when it comes to servicing Hispanic voters. However, there is a record number of Hispanic lawmakers in the 83rd legislature in Texas, and they might be able to lead the rest of their party in walking that walk. In San Antonio, David Martin Davies reporting.
Federal health reform is expected to change the face of the nation's insured population. Researchers predict 1 in 5 insured patients will be non-native English speakers. That's up from 1 in 8. But already, medical providers across the country are having trouble keeping up with the demand for translation. From San Diego, Megan Burks reports refugees are demanding a more culturally competent healthcare experience.
When Saharo Noor came to San Diego from Somalia 18 years ago, she was pregnant. When she went into labor just weeks later, her Western delivery room felt familiar. She was a midwife and a registered nurse back home. But delivery wasn't easy.
They asking me, what's wrong? What's wrong with you? Why you didn't? The baby's not coming out.
Like a lot of East African women who came to the United States in the 90s, Noor was circumcised. The cultural practice removes parts of the genitals, stitches and scar tissue, then narrow the birth canal. For a circumcised woman to give birth vaginally, the doctor would have to make incisions to reestablish the birth canal. Noor couldn't speak English at that time. She tried to pantomime the needed procedure, but it just didn't work.
And they didn't understand, and everything the baby cut by himself.
The baby came before the doctor made an incision. He's fine. In fact, he's now an adult studying engineering at San Diego State. But the complicated and painful delivery left Noor with permanent numbness. Her story is just one in a catalog of medical mishaps and nightmares refugee women in City Heights are sharing with their community. They're asking residents to sign a petition to get insurance providers to cover face-to-face translation in doctors' offices and hospitals. Zuletka Wajo is from Ethiopia. She came to San Diego by way of Oregon.
It's a lot of people that are afraid, you know, frustrations and worry too much. What's going to happen? What's he going to say? You know, because of not understanding, you worry, are he going to be help me or are he going to be damage me? You know, because you're not really comfortable what he says, what he's going to do.
Wajo said refugees often put off going to the doctor because they fear it will make things worse. Some of the women report getting a wrong medication, a misdiagnosis, even a wrong surgery because they can't communicate with their doctor. Wajo and Noor helped interview more than 200 refugee women with similar stories earlier this year. Researcher Bill Oswald helped with the study.
2/3 of the women generally said that they have no idea what their doctor is telling them. They have no faith the doctor understands them. They don't know what to do when they get their aftercare.
The state offers translated prescription labels for free online. It also passed laws requiring that all providers be culturally competent and never rely on children to translate for their parents. But a slapdash approach to translation is the status quo. Most often, family and friends are pulled in to do the work. Prescriptions are rarely translated. In San Diego, the La Maestra Clinic on Fairmont Avenue is a model because it hires from the refugee community. But still, those employees have to serve multiple roles because the clinic can't bill insurance companies for translation alone. La Maestra also has to refer patients to specialists in hospitals where translation isn't readily available. Zara Marcellian is the founder and CEO of La Maestra. She says the phone service specialists in hospitals use doesn't go far enough.
They don't have any background information on what's happening here, California, in terms of, you know, what program they could qualify for if they get into those kinds of conversations or translating those issues. They won't know. They won't know where to hook the patient up to or where to send them for help because they're outside the city, outside the state. So it's getting the job maybe a quarter done.
Wacho, who immigrated from Ethiopia 6 years ago, said she agrees.
We need inter-quality interpreter to include to our insurance face-to-face. That's what we're asking for. We don't want anymore to be barrier our health.
The women will send their petition to the board handling California's new health exchange under the Affordable Care Act. The board is tasked with setting regulations for participating insurance companies. In the meantime, Noor says she sees one glimmer of hope. Second-generation refugees are studying medicine, including her own daughter, who recently graduated from UCSD. In San Diego, I'm Megan Burks.
There's still more health news coming up on Fronteras. Many millions will be added to the healthcare rolls when the federal healthcare overhaul goes into effect, but not for people in the U.S. without legal papers. That means some families will have kids covered and kids not covered. Efforts to fill the gap in coverage. Stay tuned. Welcome back. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. When the Affordable Care Act goes into effect, millions of new patients will have access to health care. But the law deliberately excludes undocumented immigrants, estimated to be about 11 million nationwide. What does that mean for the many families with mixed immigration status? Some covered under the act and some not. Reporter Megan Burks from KPBS and the Speak City Heights Project in San Diego reports.
2 months ago, a dentist told Norma Navarro her children had three cavities each. For most parents, the next steps would be routine, book appointments for fillings, and prepare a lecture on oral hygiene. For Navarro, it isn't so easy. She and her 10-year-old daughter, Aneth, are in the country illegally. Her 7-year-old son, Angel, was born here. That means Angel is covered by a traditional public health plan, while Aneth gets spotty coverage from the state's Children's Health Development Program. The plan gives her just 1 month a year to get checkups and follow-up care. Her family's mixed status puts Navarro in a tight spot.
For my daughter, they told me they first had to acquire authorization. And for my son, they said, okay, he can come any day. I told them that I elected to wait for my son and to please hurry on the authorization for my daughter. Because sometimes my daughter does ask me, why does my brother sometimes get help first and why don't I?
Navarro says her husband is willing to scrape together extra money as a mechanic or borrow from family to pay for out-of-pocket emergency care. But she struggles with the idea of her children receiving unequal preventative care as they grow and develop.
This is something that hurts me very much. I would very much like my daughter to have the same kind of privileges that her brother has.
For Navarro, navigating the healthcare system for her children can feel a bit like a Sophie's choice, and the gap between what's available for Aneth and Angel is only slated to grow. While the Affordable Care Act will expand health coverage to millions of currently uninsured Americans, it doesn't extend benefits to the nation's 11 million undocumented immigrants. It will also cut by half the aid to hospitals that serve them.
So here's the school-based health clinic, and this is a
in City Heights, school clinics like this one, described by nurse Gail McLaurin at Central Elementary School, are helping to fill the gap. City Heights has four of them, and already they're acting as medical homes for students and their siblings, regardless of their immigration status. They're operated by the local Mid-City and La Maestra clinics, but they feel much more like small family practices.
What do I do if you say blood sugar instead of blood glucose?
You'll go nuts.
That's exactly right.
That's McLaurin again with a student during lunchtime.
Well, the advantage of having a medical home is that you have one place that has all of your medical information, and also that you have better follow-up.
McLaurin and clinic staff recently saw Navarro's daughter for a speech impediment that had been ignored at her yearly checkups. They immediately set her up with a specialist and are looking into a surgery that could help. They also had Aneth see a psychologist because her classmates are teasing her about the way she talks. Central's principal said she knows that treating undocumented kids like Aneth is a hot-button issue. It invites criticism from people like Pete Nunez. The former U.S. attorney heads a conservative think tank in D.C. called the Center for Immigration Studies.
Somebody breaks into my house and gets hurt or gets sick, I don't want to have to pay. I shouldn't have to pay for that. So if someone comes here illegally and they get sick, why should the American taxpayer pay for that?
Emergency treatment for non-urgent illnesses costs taxpayers more than $30 billion annually. 15% of the uninsured obtaining those services are undocumented. Steve Eldred is a program manager for the California Endowment. He says we should consider the cost of denying immigrants preventative care.
Healthcare as a human right, I think is part of the endowment's belief, and part of my own. But even if you don't accept that, if you look at it strictly from a cost perspective, by denying people to primary care, you're creating a system where they're going to seek the most costly care there is.
Eldred helped open City Heights' fourth school clinic in October, and he says two more are in the works. But a big piece of the puzzle is still missing in City Heights and the rest of the nation: care for undocumented adults. For that, Eldred says we'll have to look at the bigger picture.
Health doesn't come from a doctor's office or from a prescription pill. The biggest factor that determines somebody's lifespan is their zip code.
And lucky for Eldred, bringing parks and healthy food into neighborhoods can be done without bringing border politics into the mix. In San Diego, I'm Megan Burks.
Heather Berner contributed to this story with support from the Dennis A. Hunt Fund for Health Journalism. The push in Congress for immigration reform could begin as early as this month. In the meantime, there are daily reminders of a broken system. In Arizona's most populous county, a battle is playing out in the courts over unauthorized immigrants who get hired for work by using fraudulent Social Security numbers. Law enforcement has been cracking down, but some defense attorneys are questioning their authority to do so. From the Fronteras desk in Phoenix, Jude Joffe Block reports.
This September, a 27-year-old undocumented immigrant named Octavio Castaneda Flores was arrested and jailed. Law enforcement allege he was working for the past 7 years at a furniture store under someone else's name and Social Security number.
He was just working. He wasn't doing anything bad.
His wife, Brenda Santana, was at one of his recent court hearings.
He was doing something every other person is doing every day of their life to support their children and family.
Castaneda Flores is facing multiple counts of forgery and identity theft, which are Class 4 felonies. He's not alone. The Maricopa County Sheriff's Office has a designated criminal employment squad that's arrested nearly 700 immigrants at worksite raids to date. County Attorney Bill Montgomery says these cases became a priority here because of criminal and immigration trends in Arizona.
For over a decade, we were number one in the nation for identity theft offenses. And when you looked at what constituted the specific areas of identity theft, employment-related identity theft led the way.
Plus, Montgomery says Maricopa County has been a top destination for immigrants smuggled across the border. In 2008, Arizona's legislature adjusted state law to make it easier to prosecute workers who use fraudulent documents or Social Security numbers to get hired.
We took a look at those cases and we charged them for what they were. We didn't see it in a vacuum of just, you know, someone wanting to work here and doing whatever it took to be able to do that. No, there's criminal conduct involved.
Montgomery says working with a fraudulent Social Security number isn't a victimless crime because it can impact someone else's Social Security benefits. But now some attorneys are challenging the county's authority to bring these charges and argue the real motive is immigration enforcement.
The Maricopa County Attorney Sheriff's Office and Maricopa County Attorney's Office together want to combat illegal immigration by criminally penalizing people who work unlawfully.
Dahlia Salvatierra is a local defense and immigration attorney.
Nowhere in the country is unlawful employment being penalized as it is in Maricopa County.
Many other legal experts agree. Salvatierra claims the pattern works like this. The county attorney charges these immigrants with Class 4 forgery and identity theft felonies. Under Arizona law, undocumented immigrants facing that category of crime can't get out on bail. So defendants are locked up for months awaiting trial. Then if they are convicted of those charges, they'll be ineligible for any kind of federal immigration benefits, and they're likely to be deported.
I think this is unlawful detention. This is unconstitutional. The Supreme Court has clearly stated that federal law preempts state criminal prosecutions of individuals working without lawful status.
She's referring to the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in June that struck down several sections of Arizona's immigration enforcement law, SB 1070. The court invalidated a section that made working illegally a state crime, and the opinion suggests that federal employment forms, like the ones that require a Social Security number, can't be used in state criminal proceedings as evidence. For his part, Montgomery denies that his office is considering immigration consequences when it presses charges.
My responsibility is to prosecute the crimes. It's not to attempt to execute a different immigration policy aside from the federal government or to try to make up through criminal prosecutions any perceived deficiencies in enforcing federal immigration law.
But Montgomery also says he'll have to prosecute these crimes as long as Arizona's border with Mexico remains insecure.
The federal government could take away all of my concerns tomorrow by simply securing the border and doing what they have a responsibility to do. But unless and until they do their job, I have to do mine.
The debate will continue playing out in the courtroom. In Phoenix, I'm Jude Joffe Block.
You've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, and KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. Fronteras is online at fronterasdesk.org. We're also on Facebook, and we invite you to join the conversations there. For headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. Our handle is fronterasdesk. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. The theme music you're listening to was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.